I came to understand what home means on a whole other level when I was doing an oral history project back in April 2005. It was the 30th anniversary of the fall of Saigon, the end of the Vietnam War. The Society of the Divine Word, a religious Catholic religious group, had hired me to interview their priests and brothers who were Vietnamese Americans, 20-some men who had escaped Vietnam after the end of the war. It was to be a story gathering during the day from these men, and then we would have a public performance with professional storytellers at night for our annual Just Stories Storytelling Festival. The first person I interviewed was Neil. He had been 14 when he escaped Vietnam. His father had worked for the South Vietnamese, and that meant when the North Vietnamese, the Viet Cong, took over, it was really hard on Neil's family. They weren't able to live. He wasn't able to have work. The kids couldn't go to the same school, on and on. So decided that Neil would escape, hopefully get a job, send money back home. Maybe others could come out eventually as well. Long story short, how they got to the boats, but when he got there, Neil was placed in the bottom of a boat with 64 other people, fishing tackle, nets thrown on top of him. You can imagine the smell. And they heard their boat motor out of this channel, and then it stopped. They heard some voices exchanged. The captain must have paid somebody off. And they got out of that channel and out to the sea. They were going to Thailand. But then, a day or so into this journey, their motor died, just absolutely out of it, kaput. Now, they'd only escaped with what basically the clothes on their back. They didn't bring extra food. They didn't have enough water. Now, the captain was bringing a case of a special Vietnamese hot sauce to a friend of his in Thailand who loved this hot sauce and couldn't get it in Thailand. So they'd line up these couple of days they were just marooned there and get a little dollop of this spicy hot sauce. Lick that. That would be it for a day. Well, about the third day into this tragedy, they saw a ship. Wow, okay, yeah, we're over here. Everybody's waving and shouting. So they got closer and saw that they were pirates. Now, some of us think of pirates back in Peter Pan, those kind of stories. Pirates just means thieves at sea, right? Thieves at sea. And so these pirates jumped on board and they stole the little bit that the people had, if they had any jewelry on or whatever. They even took the motor in case they could rehab that. But worse than all that, they stabbed everybody on board and threw them overboard. So Neil woke up in the ocean, bleeding, you know, kind of, where was he? Now, he was wearing pants that were kind of loose-fitting, kind of like pajama bottoms, the kind of pants that a lot of men wore in Vietnam. And he had the presence of mind to take those off and kind of dry them out in the sun and blow some air and tie a knot at either end of a pant leg and use that like an inner tube to hang on. And he hung like that for a couple of days, but he had no more strength. He was bleeding, hypothermia. He just had to give up, and he let go, and he started to sink into the water, and he heard this voice say, "No, not yet. It's not your time." And he kind of bobbed back up to the surface just as this giant red plastic gas can came floating by. And so Neil climbed on that and he hung on that for another whole day. And then Thai fishermen came by. Now, you have to understand that Thai fishermen were told, I mean, there was just too many refugees coming into Thailand. If they picked any refugees up, any of these boat people up, they could lose their fishing license. But what are you going to do when you see a kid hanging on a gas can in the middle of the ocean, bleeding to death? Well, they did the right thing, and they picked him up, and they motored around, but out of 65 people, it seemed as though Neil was the only survivor. So they tried to warm him up and give him some water and such, but as they got towards shore, they had families to feed to. They couldn't risk losing their license, so they couldn't bring Neil ashore, and they had to place him back in the water. And somehow he made it to shore, and making a long story short, he got through this horrible part of getting through weeds and forest and jungle and rainforest, and he got to a refugee camp, but it was not a UN refugee camp. He said it was horrible. He slept on a platform tent like 26 people across, packed like sardines, just like he had at the bottom of the boat. There he slept, packed like sardines. And they were only given a little rice and a couple vegetables, maybe a little fish. And they had to make that last a few days. And of course, everybody was trying to steal each other's food because everybody was starving. And they could throw you in jail, no due process, of course. And when he arrived, like most of the people, he was disoriented. He didn't have any ID on him, and they were questioning him day after day. Are you communist? Are you a spy? Because the trick to getting sponsored in another country was that you had to pass all these tests that you weren't some kind of underground spy or something. And, of course, he had no money, and so what was his chance of getting out? And so many people were caught in limbo like this. They couldn't go forward hoping to get a better life, but they couldn't go back to their old life. And Neil met another boy his age, Tom, in a Bible study class they had there. And Tom had been stuck there for 7 years. He hadn't maybe answered the questions right. He had no ID. He had no money. And he was just caught in that limbo. And one day, they were waiting for Bible study class to begin, and Neil said Tom seemed particularly down, and he excused himself, said he was going to the bathroom. Now, the bathroom in the refugee camp was just some holes in the ground with little shrubbery and some trees around for a little bit of privacy. Well, Tom didn't come to class, and he didn't show up, and he didn't show up, so finally Neil went to find him, and he found him. Tom had hung himself. He just couldn't take limbo any longer. And finally, they sent Tom's remains home. He finally made it home to Vietnam. And Neil looked up at me. He had been very soft-spoken, telling me this whole story, and he said, I never told that story to anybody. Now, folks, this was my first interview. Only 20 more interviews to go. I heard such incredible stories of escape and bravery and family loss and sacrifice and idealism. Many of us heard from U.S. soldiers, other personnel being at that war, but not too many of us heard it from the Vietnamese perspective, especially Vietnamese-American perspective. And so as I listened to story after story, I got an idea, and I asked some of these men, would they be willing to share their stories? And about a half a dozen volunteered for our storytelling concert that night. Now, we had about 5 minutes to rehearse, but the brothers got up there and they shared their stories. And forget us professional storytellers. I mean, the brothers spoke and they stole the show. Wasn't a dry eye in the place. And Neil, for the second time, told the story of his friend, Tom. He came up to me afterwards and he said, you know, it was very painful today recalling all this, but very important. I have been here for over 20 years, and because of how people listened to our stories, finally I feel that I have arrived in America. I am home. The estimates run from the teens to over 20 million refugees wandering the planet right now, trying to find home. The numbers are uncertain. I mean, governments are not that forthcoming about displaced people in their countries. But one number that can be documented is that a good percentage of those people have been in refugee camps for 10 years or more. People stuck in limbo between their old homes they can't go back to and the unrealized dream of a new home filled with safety and opportunity. In over 120 countries, millions of men, women, and children this very day are displaced by war, famine, genocide. Some have been displaced for generations. When you leave wherever you are today as you listen to this, I wish you all the safest journey home. And when you arrive to wherever your ending destination is, I wish for you to hold tight everything and everyone you hold dear. And I wish for all of us, and I'm talking myself included, I wish for all of us to find a way to remember and keep our hearts open to all those who are still searching for home.